and brightest day, in blackest night, all other podcasts tremble in fright. Losers cower before the power. Orange is lust, and blues you can trust. Indigos feel, and white ones heal. Yellow scare, and green ones dare. That sapphire love and black hands glove will rock your foundation without hesitation. Chad and Mars face evil's might. Respect their power, for they'll make you see the light.
Hi, everybody. I'm Chad Bokelman.
I'm Mark Marble.
And this is the Lantern Cast.
Episode 581.
Listener feedback.
Second time's a charm.
Yeah, it's actually been, not that we haven't covered feedback in random spots here and there, but an all feedback episode, yeah, for sure. Well, let's just dive into it. What do we got first?
We're going to be playing, since we're playing catch up, it makes sense to start with Monty, because Monty's got several. So this goes back to August, so no, we have not forgotten, obviously. Greetings, Lantern Cast. Yes, I'm an idiot for not thinking that last email through, and that's before I cast Pal as the bastard. To be clear, this is what Adam's version makes me feel. A perfect antidote to that was reading some John's Dark Side War, where he gives Bruce the ring to separate him from the Mobius chair, despite the great risk to himself, and Venditti, end of New 52, with his concern for his nephew after Sonar's attack on the Ferris wheel stuff, which quickly made me realize I was being reactionary, unfair and downright short-sighted with a side order of projection. Apologies, I'll try to do better. It is nice to note that I give enough of a shit to think that deeply about it in the first place, for the first time in a while. Yeah, we've kind of talked about the whether Hal was really being a jerk in this book or not when it first started, and I certainly don't think that he really was as bad as a lot of other people did. But yeah.
As bad, no, but he definitely had some growth to do in terms of how he was treating Carol. Like, the idea that you can just pop back up into somebody's life and she's moved on, or even she just says she's moved on and you feel otherwise, like, she said she moved on. Don't fucking push the issue, brother.
Well, except for the fact that as the book played out, we found out that there's a reason why Hal feels basically, yeah, that's what she says, but that's not what she means. And that's not doesn't always mean known garbage. It's just the fact that based on their personal relationship, he knows that what she says and what she means are not the same thing, because if she did, then they wouldn't be falling back into the same pattern again. So,
yeah,
but I get what you're saying. But people were kind of like, I think, looking through the PC-ness of 2023, 2024 and judging Hal Jordan. And a little too harshly compared to what was reading between the lines of how screwed up their relationship is. Yeah. So meanwhile, wow, so many Green Lanterns number one in the past 10 years. It feels especially special that we reached an issue 13 for the first time in that time. I got to tell you, that's one weird ass sentence, Monty, between especially special and first time in that time. Wowza, who knows? Maybe this run will finally be as epic and far reaching as the Mars run. Maybe we can hit a 25 at least. That one we probably can bet on that it will. Your coverage of the main Thorn run has wrapped where I am, and I echo your main thoughts. I was quite excited in the early issues. One thing I want to see is all the Earth Lanterns get together so we can properly sort out their roles in the whole thing. But when it sounds like it had to go off the rails later on just to accommodate Dark Crisis, I would have liked Thorn to have his 3 12-issue arcs as per the original plan. We are seeing something like this gathering of Earth's greens and current issues, but it seems like something always gets in the way. The fast-paced but a little less fragmented Green Lantern 14 was another good issue. Mm-hmm. I'm very much looking forward to the confrontation the last page sets up. Well, you may have wanted those 3 12-issue arcs, but I'm sure not many people, including us, I wanted to see it, because there may have been some good ideas in the next 24 issues Thorn would have given us, but considering what the first 12 were like, I'm glad we didn't get that.
Give me a what-if style series of, like, what if Thorn got got his 12-issue arcs without interrupting my main publishing line, sure, maybe I'll invest in a trade paperback when it's on sale. But don't interrupt my main monthly Green Lantern issues with that.
Screw that. Make it like a 48-page one-shot. That's it. So let's sum up the next 2 years in one issue, please. Make it tight. I listened to your Future Lanterns episode and must congratulate you on a fine job. I really felt a lot of obscure corners were brightened by the exposure and would welcome more episodes of the like in the future. I just reread the first two volumes of Showcase Presents Green Lantern and thought maybe a most bizarre stuff from the Silver Age episode might be fun. My prize is an original V2 number 37 with binder holes. Sad face. And though I think it was Evil Star's first appearance, the other story is about Hal turning himself into a letter so he can infiltrate a gang of spies by getting Tom to mail him and then getting picked up at the post office by one of the bad guys. What? Well, that's the Silver Age for you. Also, I'm not much of a social media person. I've never been on the Facebook and I don't have the Twitters, but I might be interested in the Discord you've been talking about. Where I am in time, about 483 or so. So I'm requesting the link. I don't know if we ever sent them the link. Did we?
I don't know.
I guess we better do it after that. When we get done with this, or it's really embarrassing. If you ended up opening it up to all along the line, that's fine. I'll just wait till then. Yeah, that's like we said, you should have gotten the link. Anyway, I'm heading off again. Thanks for all your great work and your time. I'm going to start signing off with a quote like comic editors, like our beloved Peter Tomasi used to do, because I miss it. Do we really need to read that quote? I'm not sure how many people it's going to mean a lot to. But I will do you a P.S. though. Yesterday, an army priest was attacked here in Ireland, and his first message to the congregation to say he was doing relatively okay, he ended the message with, "All will be well." Which means he's one up on St. Walker, who's never friggin' well.
They take some prep and some research, but I do like the ones where we actually do a lot of the planning and stuff, like the Future Lanterns, where there's some research, you're digging into it a bit, you're reading a couple of back issues. It's not like it's a scripted episode, but it does feel like, man, I put some work into this. That feels good. And those do end up being fun to re-listen to as well, so thank you for that. I don't know about most bizarre stuff from the Silver Age, but as he was suggesting things, I was thinking, you know, focusing on people from space sector 1 to 100, or, you know, some, I don't know. We obviously wouldn't name it that, but like, some, you know, just more in-depth looks at those random obscure either characters or moments would be interesting for sure.
That is true. And doing Silver Age stuff is always fun, kind of a nice reprieve, just because of its simplicity and honestly and its mindlessness compared to at least we never had to worry about friggin' 20 issue arcs in those days.
All right, on to the next.
On to the next.
This one is from September, at the end of September, called Past, Present, and Future. Hi, Lantern Cast, how you doing? Here are a few thoughts from the brain parts. Past, I'm reading up on all my old GLs at the moment and just finished the Marv Wolfman run. I was going to suggest giving it another go, but now I'm not so sure. There is a lot of cool stuff to be sure. Hal and Carol together, some great classic villain stories in the first appearance of the Omega Men, for instance. But its classic run status is let down a bit by some cheesy dialogue, including my least favorite line in any comic ever. Kill him! That's all I ever hear these days. Tell me truthfully, guys, is it my breath? Do I offend? Even as a child, that one made me shudder. I also read the term handy dandy about 50 times in the past week, so to see it said in the newest issue was quite the mirthful moment. This was, however, the start of the Tales of the GLC backups. Any chance to focus on those in the future? Chip's first story, Among the Stars, and a Metaphil adventure, which was called Don't Eat the Yellow Snow, I think were some of my faves of the early years of that. That is a good idea of focusing on those backups that we used to get in GL, whether it was Tales of the GLC or even going back and when Green Lantern Green Arrow was a backup in the Flash, like those moments for sure.
Yeah, that's definitely something that obviously we would have to organize. But yeah, it's definitely something that would be fun to do.
Yeah, I wonder if there were other little features, like not even like I'm picturing them like this, but I'm not thinking of them like, weren't there small little short stories in other comics that were almost kind of like Hostess ads, like not actually Hostess ads, but like the roughly the size of a Hostess ad, like a one pager quick little short story? Comics in like the 60s had those, right?
They might have.
Like you'd be reading a Superman issue and then randomly you'd have like a one page Wonder Woman story.
It could be. And also, for some reason, I wouldn't be surprised if there were things like that in the dollar comics.
Yeah, I'm wondering if we could do like a Green Lantern short stories thing, you know, covering all those. That'd be interesting. Anyways, spurred a good idea. Thanks for that, Monty. Present. I needed a new podcast, so I started listening to Just One of the Guys. Great stuff. From his appearance on Lantern Cast, I never expected Sean to have such a sting in his tail on some subjects. It's great that he left behind such an impressive body of work. I also didn't know going in that he had covered not only Kyle's run, but the first 50 issues before that, and Guy Gardner's book, and a bunch of other stuff too. I especially love the focus on ads. Also, I thoroughly enjoyed your Focus on Parallax episode. Not only are these some of the most entertaining and informative episodes, you guys seem to have a great time making them too. See above for my suggestion on what to do next, though feel free to ignore me, for I am but a humble listener. Shout out to you for the Parallax stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, I appreciate that other people, it seems like most people enjoyed that episode. It certainly was a fun episode to record, it's one of those things, and I'm trying to remember what episode I can compare it to. I think the closest thing I can compare it to, as far as, and I don't mean that the episodes turned out the same at all, but I mean talk about like using the what if mantra, that the Parallax episode, I had a raw outline for it. I just can't speak today. A raw outline for it. And I don't mean just like little. It was not like bullet point after bullet point after bullet point, but I had it split into three eras on purpose. But the way we segued into the first was just so perfect. It just, everything just rolled perfectly. It's like you just hitting the beats. It's like this natural segues. So the episode in my mind's eye, I kind of looked at almost as an inversion of that was, I think, our 0 hour retrospective, because I think it turned out fine as an episode, but I don't think it kind of went exactly the way in my mind's eye it could have, which doesn't mean it's worse than it could have been. It just means it was different. And to be fair, I don't think the outline was as tight anyway, or maybe it was that easy to do an outline to make it any tighter than that. But the episode, probably, as we already mentioned, the Future Lanterns episode is probably the closest thing to the Parallax episode, I think, that we've done like in the last few years. That those episodes probably stand out the most, I think.
Yeah, for sure. And good shout out to Sean Engel of Just One of the Guys.
Yeah,
he's definitely missed, but you know, Just One of the Guys, it sounds like it's still out there, I guess, which is good. I mean, I think that was Two True Freaks podcasting network, I believe. So go focus on that. Like, it's morbid to think about, but like, I have thought that, you know, especially given what happened to Sean, like, you know, if I unexpectedly pass away, how cool it is that there's kind of this audio archive anyone in my family could listen to hear me, you know. So it's got to be I would hope it's a good comfort that those episodes with Sean, for everybody who misses him, are still available to listen to.
Yes, I agree with that.
All right, Future. Next month is looking great for comics with Green Lantern Dark, which I decided to get after all because I regretted not picking up the Allen series after Dan's fantastic reviews on Mosaic, plug, and whatever Civil Core is. I imagine this may be more what I imagine War of the GLs to be like, with faction against faction instead of the kind of lame mind control story we got. It's even worse.
Spoiler alert, you're not even close.
Yep.
See, personally, I never got that analogy. I never thought that that's what they were trying to get across. I never thought at all they were trying to make it sound like it was going to be a civil war kind of thing. No. I guess because core and war sounds a little bit alike, but I never once in a, I mean, it could have been in a half, well, not a half ass, but it could have been in a, and still in a way, if it was just basically meaning all the real Green Lanterns were fighting all the faux Green Lanterns. But of course, we never got that either. He's a brave man going down that rabbit hole after drinking Dan's Kool-Aid on the Alan series, because that book was really not that good. But I'm Dan liked it, so I guess that's something. But we know it got better in the last couple of issues. But
it's true.
But it might have been by default.
Bonkers Theory Department. GLs are clearly a big part of the Gunn Safran plans. I expect a guy who seems like an arsehole at the start, but goes through an arc that shows you how he really is by the end. But mostly I'm wondering if there will be a GL in the Krypton explosion bit. Rather than Tomar Rae, I expect they'll use a Kryptonian who may turn up in present day. I watched Guardians of the Galaxy 3 recently. I was blown away by how good it was, in my opinion. I'm guessing Chad wasn't too happy about Adam Warlock's portrayal. Looking forward to that episode, but it made me feel like that with this Suicide Squad. Gunn is at the top of his game, so I started getting very excited about it all. Roll on, Creature Commandos. Right, that's it for now. Back soon. And then his quote that he left us this time is, "Your women, Green Lantern, are now mine, and we'll all gladly watch you die." Ha 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 ha. Wow. I hadn't heard anybody going quite as far as like putting up a theory like we're going to see a Kryptonian explosion. There's going to be a Kryptonian Green Lantern who's going to show up later on. I don't know how you got there, but it would be cool to see. We've always said on the show, you know, when it pops up, those moments that Green Lantern kind of, just because it's the cosmic thing that connects so much of the cosmic DC universe in terms of how long it's been active, it would really make sense to see a Green Lantern show up in the background or as a supporting cast member or whatever in almost any DC cosmic titles, even set in any time in DC cosmic. So yeah, I wouldn't mind seeing, you know, it was the backup in Superman, right? Where Tomar was getting his review by the Guardians, and they were recapping the day Krypton exploded, and it was quote unquote his fault.
Something to that effect, yes. I think that's where that story came from, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you look at this. Let's see. My opinion, for what it's worth, I don't think anything that what he expects to see or what he's hoping to see, we're getting any of that. I don't think we're going to see a guy with a, you know, kind of like an asshole with a heart of gold. I don't think Guy's going to be in that Superman movie enough for us to really get that. We may see something that indicates that Guy talks a lot of shit, but that there's something inside of him that's a little deeper, but I don't think there's going to be like this big, you know, this big revelation or anything. Almost like, speaking of Adam Warlock, just like the revelation of, oh, you know, somebody did something nice for Adam Warlock that he didn't need to, and that kind of made him reevaluate, you know, the way his approach to. I doubt we're going to get that with Guy in the Superman movie, but it's possible. I'll say that one's a possible. Yeah, I don't think we're going to get anything related to Krypton at all, because again, it's not an origin story.
Yeah.
So it doesn't seem like if we're having a Kryptonian villain, I don't think. I'm trying to remember who the hell did they say was going to be the villain based on the pictures that were leaked?
I thought it was Brainiac.
No, I mean, it could be Brainiac, but that's not the one. That's not the one who I'm. There were pictures that leaked. When you're talking about something, I'll try to Google it. But yeah, and if nothing else, your comments about the Creature Commandos was timely. Consider.
Have you seen it? I haven't.
Yeah, I watched the first two episodes over the weekend.
Is it good?
Yeah, it's pretty good. It's essentially, I mean, to be perfectly honest, it's almost like a sequel to Gunn Suicide Squad.
Okay, so it's like animated Suicide Squad part.
Yeah, I mean, you have Rick Flagg Sr. Obviously, it takes place in the same world where everything with Amazo or whatever, everything happened. So it's just a So yeah,
you mean Starro?
I knew I got that wrong. Yeah, Starro. Yeah.
Come on, man. So, those are two. We saw a giant blue starfish from space. I mean, see.
They end in Oro, don't they? So that's the best mistake.
Yeah.
At least I knew it wasn't Bizarro. I was pretty happy with the first two episodes. So I thought that was
good.
I thought that was pretty good.
I mean, he's talking about Chad. I'm guessing Chad wasn't too happy about Adam Warlock's betrayal. I don't remember. I don't remember what I thought. I will say, so what I'm about to say could be a change in opinion. I don't know. With hindsight being 2020, overall, just compared to what I would hope to see from Adam Warlock based on the comics and stuff. Yeah, it's kind of disheartening to get a douchey, you know, kind of frat bro dude, in a way, and a dumb one at that. I don't know. I think at the end of the day, specifically with Adam Warlock, I might be, if this is my only portrayal, your my only chance to see him in the MCU, then yeah, it's a disappointment overall. But if we do get to see him again, I think a lot of my opinion is going to hinge on what they do with him moving forward, if anything. Adam Warlock's a cool-ass character, and I'd like to see that.
That's another character that they kind of have screwed around with a lot. So I just... And we know the fact that Adam Warlock, you know, the mere fact that Adam Warlock had, you know, had nothing to do with anything, any of the Thanos saga, kind of is weird introducing him after the fact. And it's very, very weird the way they're doing that. So
I tried to get his first appearance a few years ago and I couldn't. And plus, I think there's some discrepancies among the fandom of which is his actual first appearance, in terms of, when he was like known as him.
Yes.
Yeah. I think also oddly enough, isn't there also a discrepancy about Gambit, which like the one we all think of where Gambit is on the cover with a child Storm. Like that's the one I own. That's the one a lot of people consider his first appearance. But there's actually some other issue that's supposedly Gambit's first appearance. I'm sorry. Maybe I'm going too far down the Marvel hole there.
Oh, besides Luthor, I think Ultraman is rumored to be one of the villains.
Oh, like Crime Syndicate.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay. I knew there was somebody who was somewhat recognizable based on the symbol that people were talking about. Yeah. So it doesn't mean it's true, but that's who he's playing, or even that he's going to be a major factor, but also what the engineer, I think, is mentioned for being in that movie too.
That's a name. That's a name I've not heard for a long time.
But yeah, so we'll see about that. But it'll be interesting to see how what stuff is in that Superman movie. I think that's going to be, I'm still hoping we'll get an Eradicator at some point. That is one character that has never been, when you think about it, hasn't been touched in any way, shape or form in any of their movies.
Shades and all.
Visor. I would not expect that kind of version would be, I, that would probably be built up to, because if you had a brain in your head, which kind of left out Zack Snyder there, that there's too much of a good story to do with the Reign of the Superman for you to just like, hey, let's just jump directly into it, because let's take two of the greatest Superman stories ever told and let's ruin them both in the course of like 20 minutes. And that's pretty much what he did in BVS. So yeah, I would just in general, I mean, whether it's the Krypton Man, do something to at least bring the Eradicator into the story, and then eventually maybe, yeah, if you do something like the Reign of the Superman properly, then you can do that. But then again, they may never do that because we've gotten enough animated versions of it that they may not want to go down that rabbit hole again.
Yeah.
Though it sucks. The live action, that's such a natural two-part movie, or if you want to call it a series or just a two-parter, you know, the Death of Superman and then the Reign of the Superman. It's just natural. I mean, it's just perfect. But
yeah,
we'll see.
All right, what's next?
So what's next is let's do Anas, because he's talking about some of the emotional spectrum stuff. Emotional spectrum, messy rant, which is going to be really even more appropriate based on the arc we're about to get into. This is from October 30th. Almost Halloween. Hey guys, hope you're doing well. I have a few thoughts about the weird obsession of writers to add spectrum colors just because it was cool when Johns did it, and want to hear what you think about them. I absolutely agree that adding new colors that always existed is a bad idea, since it contradicts John's lore. For example, the UV lanterns, but there is an interesting idea or two that if utilized, they can evolve the concept of the emotional spectrum. Even though, not that I ever read the story, but the UV lanterns really weren't directly connected to the emotional spectrum, were they?
Not really. Not really. Dan could better explain it than I did, but yeah, I remember him saying, like, him basically backing up what I said in terms of, like, reading through all that was kind of a chore just to get the very little information they gave you.
Yeah, and considering they never did anything with the UV stuff actually in any of the proper Green Lantern books themselves. The concept of dividing emotions, which comes from the fact that there are seven emotions of the spectrum, are so general that a lot of sub-emotions can exist under these umbrellas of general emotions. My theory regarding the Sorrow Lantern that I'll look at months later and laugh about, since I'm always off the mark with theories, for example, can showcase that. When Nate became the Sorrow Lantern, he found Carol because he's tethered to her. He is controlled by Sorrow in a similar way to classic Star Sapphire, and his talk about love is corny as it sounds like some talk Carol would say when controlled by the Sapphire. So what if he isn't a Sorrow Lantern, but a Star Sapphire who is tapping into the negative part of that emotion since he fell in love with the wrong person? There, go ahead. You want to say something first?
No, I mean, I like that better than some other theories, but it still is essentially it's still doing the whole it always existed because it's the root part of the spectrum, just because you're exploring the negative side of it. I also don't like necessarily applying negative and positive to the emotional spectrum, just because, like, I get it, like, you know, when we're talking about anger and greed and fear and stuff, you know, it's easy to classify those as negative emotions and the other side is positive. But we've seen, like, you know, love as a positive thing can have a negative side effect with sorrow, but also, like, fear, while inherently negative, has positive side effects, like, you know, it keeping you alive in some situations and things like that. So, like, I don't necessarily going the negative positive and then finding, like, you know, what's love is inherently positive. So let's explore the negative side of that by giving it its own sort of filter to that already existing emotion. Like, it still kind of does the same thing.
And I have something to say, but let's just go with the next sentence. He says, I get that some of what I'm saying would not make sense to the classic rules, but now with the emotional spectrum being disrupted, maybe that is a thing that can happen. And that's kind of, but he said, again, I could see that, because to me, that's how, in my mind's eye, until, you know, again, theories that'll probably be shot down quickly, that if you go with my theory or my possible explanation that the spectrum is fractured only because it's almost like it was forced to expand and then was, and either was one way or the other, either it contracted and then was then and then had to expand, or was in response to the contraction, or vice versa, was forced to expand and it naturally wanted to contract to put itself back together again, that if because of either Theros or like you said, it could even be when they refilled the reservoir, if something caused teeny splinters of the emotional spectrum that would have, under normal circumstances, they were all pieces that did belong to one of the seven colors, but something prevented that, especially if it's the Theros stuff, because maybe there hasn't been enough time now, and because Theros has disrupted the natural flow of the spectrum so much, it couldn't reabsorb these slivers, that yes, that every one of the existing colors could have a fractal piece that reflects another aspect of it that under normal circumstances would have just been swallowed up and put back into it. So in this case, sorrow could, based on what he was saying, it is a viable theory that sorrow could be an offshoot of love, but not because it's always existed. So I think, I mean, that would be the, and we, I think we're pretty much in agreement, that would be the worst possible explanation, which I don't think Jeremy will do, that these things have always existed, unless they always existed but were walled off from the very beginning by something else because they were prevented from merging back into the spectrum. But saying they always existed and we just never saw them before, that's not going to fly, in my opinion. There's also the concept of combining rings and emotions, which we've seen with Kyle as the White Lantern, but we've never tapped into with less than seven emotions. Well, we kind of have. We've seen people wield multiple multiple rings and colors before without being actually long before Kyle had all seven. What if Guy, for example, can have a ring of will and rage, which I think he did at one point, utilizing both emotions at the same time and not one emotion at a time like he did when he wore the red and green. Okay, red and green together. But we've also seen Guy with like he had was it red and sapphire?
Yeah, because his thing he said it was like something like I love the core and I hate when people attack it or something like that.
But yeah,
I remember that because he was like screaming it at the top of his lungs while he's creating constructs to like try and destroy the battery.
Yeah, that was in War of the Green Lanterns, wasn't it?
Yeah,
at some point.
Yeah.
So these ideas remind me of the Gold Lantern who fandom calls the happy lantern. I don't know a lot about him except for what Dan researched for his Mosaic comics. Spoiler alert, there ain't much to know about him.
Yeah, but basically what Dan said is all there is to know.
Yeah. Talk about a comic book prick tease that has never gone anywhere. But if he is a lantern who is just utilizing multiple existing powers from the seven emotions and not, but what if he is a lantern who is just utilizing multiple existing powers from the seven emotions and not using a new emotion? Would his existence happen to be because of the spectrum being messed up, that the positive sides of these neutral emotions combined into a happiness-powered ring? It's also interesting to note that while he is a Gold Lantern, he was mentioned by Bendis to be using willpower despite not being a Green Lantern. Hmm. Plus, this is in the future, right? Legion shit. This is Legion shit. So the odds are anything that's going on with the emotional, even now retconning it, it probably is going to have nothing, I think, to do with it. Anyway,
don't forget there was some sort of guardian like council that not a part of the Legion that the Gold Lantern answered to, and that there were
others. That is true. And that which is different than like the Legion of Three Worlds future with Soda Miat and being the last. Anyway, it'll be fun months from now to look at this mail and laugh about how wrong I was. Last thing, since Venom 3 is out and you're going to review it, have you guys read the Cates and Stegman run? And if yes, what do you think of how it influenced Venom 3 and how the plots were adapted in the movie? Obviously, that's for you.
But yeah, we already talked about Venom 3 and we talked about that. I mean, like, and how it influenced Venom 3. I mean, it's null.
It was Venom 3, right?
Yeah, it's null. So like, of course it was influenced. I mean, like how it influenced, like I said, I still believe this. It's both too early and interesting how they brought in null. It just feels like one of those rushes to get, you know, to capitalize on something, because like, you know, You either threw away chances to adapt something else because it wouldn't work, or there's just not enough to farm in terms of big recognizable names, in terms of symbiote specific lore. You got Venom and you got some other symbiotes from like from the 90s era in terms of Phage and some of the other stuff. And then you, of course we got to do Carnage, and then now it's like, okay, well now we're done. What else? But so they leap automatically to Null, who's created in the 20-aughts. And it's like, well, he was only created about 4 years ago. This feels a little too soon to, especially as big an OP of a character as Null is. They introduced him, played around with the concept for a few years in its own title, then had a universe-wide crossover comic series to help kind of establish him as a big bad in the universe, and now we're already throwing him into films. It feels too early, but I also didn't hate how they did it. So, like, I don't know. As far as Cates and Stegman specifically, like, of course, I enjoy their run. I think Cates is is one of our top tier writers just in comics in general, in terms of I would gladly give anything Cates writes a try, at least the first issue, without question. Much in the same way I do other people like Ram V and stuff like that, or Al Ewing, or you know, a few others out there. So I enjoyed the Kate Stegman run. I don't think they adapted as much as others believe they did, other than just the core concept of Null. I don't think they were just straight up lifting characterization or any of that stuff in Venom 3.
Cool. I think that's going to be our journey down the feedback for now. At least we dug through a lot of it.
For sure. All right, I guess that's it. So, Mark, what have you seen, man?
Not much, but there are two things since my post credit multi scene thing. I saw Moana 2. I saw that the Wednesday before Thanksgiving. I have to go back and watch the first one. Which is sad. I won't go into the details. It was a really Thanksgiving itself was fine, but from the time I got home on Thanksgiving night for the rest of the weekend, it was really not good. So I never really got a chance to watch the original Moana again to refresh my memory. I just remember bits. I like Moana 2. It's entertaining. So it was, and it's nice and crisp. I mean, as much as I prefer Wicked, you know, Wicked is, you know, when you see Wicked with trailers and the pre-show and everything, Wicked's going to be 3 hours long. This is a movie that without anything is like around an hour 40. So it's kind of nice and a nice palate cleanser from that perspective. So I definitely recommend Moana 2. Saw Y2K last week. That's a mixed bag. There's humor in Y2K. And I don't think it failed because Rachel Zegler was in it, though a lot of people will just automatically say, oh, it's Rachel Zegler that brought it down. She probably didn't help it, but she didn't bring it down. But it's a movie. It's an interesting movie because clearly a lot of the humor in the movie is really dependent on you being old enough to remember what the world was really like in 1999, what the late 90s environment was. I mean, some things people will universally understand, like, you know, like AOL and what it means, you know, the concept of dial up internet, which, you know, that was horrible. But
get off the phone. I'm trying to use the internet.
Yes. Well, actually, more likely to be the other way around. They'd be telling us to get off the computer because they wanted to use the phone. But yes, it's the same thing, unless you were lucky enough to have multiple lines. Like, that was the good thing about being at work at the time, is we had like four lines for works. So there was one line and they were split. We had two different splitters. So I was able to just use one line connected to the modem and the computer. So I literally, once the time I got to the got to work, I could stay on all day, which again shows you what dial-up was like, because I still remember vividly spending all damn day downloading the first trailer for Attack of the Clones, and it literally took like 6 or 7 hours to download the thing so you could finally onto your computer so you could watch it.
What, no LimeWire?
No, directly to save it on your computer. That it would take, because even at 56K, which you'd be, if you were you were living the high life if you were connected to 56K all the time. But yes, so you have to know a lot of the humor in Y2K is a movie is based on having experienced it. So unfortunately, that wipes out a large percentage of the movie going audience now, because you have to be probably at least 30, but more and probably more like 35-ish at the very least to really be able to fully grasp it. If you're only in your early 20s. 20 to 24, 20 to 25, you're probably too young to even remember, actually 20, even 25 would be pushing it, because that would take you back to 99. You would have to be bare minimum like 30 to at least remember firsthand vaguely any of this. And so you'd have to be more like 35, at least be in the active age where you get all the humor. I think it's fine for what it is, but you know, it's there are some flaws in it, lots of flaws in it, but it was entertaining. I don't think anybody needs to run out to see it.
Just because we're wrapping up the episode, I'm not going to go into what I was going to go into, but I'll save it for another episode. But I will say Justice League Unlimited number one is now out. Well, we're not going to review it on the show. We'll talk about it briefly a little bit more in the future. But I would recommend people go pick up issue one. I don't think yet until we see issues two, three, so on and so forth, whether or not this means you should invest in the series, mostly because I get the feeling at the end of that first issue that that was just a mission, and we're going to get a bunch of missions with a bunch of random team members. So I don't necessarily think that the team that we saw in the first issue and presented on the first cover is going to, like, we're going to get an arc with that team. We may focus back in on some of those characters from time to time, and we very clearly will, but it's not necessarily known based on how that read whether or not Carol is one of them. But she does have a good moment in that issue, which is why I'm saying it's worth picking up the issue. Maybe wait and see if you tell your LCS, hey, add it to my pull list. If your curiosity was such that I want to read it to see what happens with Carol, worth it for issue one, I'd say. But again, we don't know if she's going to be the focus issue two, three, four. So
that is true. They could just hop, skip, and jump and give everybody their little moment in the sun.
For sure. For sure. But worth it to grab. Great art. You know, Dan Moore kills it. It was Dan Moore, right? Am I forgetting? Yeah, whatever. I'm pretty sure it was. And and like I said, Carol does get a really cool moment that's worth checking out. So other than that, I guess we should wrap things up. Where can people find us?
LanternCast.com. The email is LanternCast@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook, #Geocast, or Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean, wherever you listen to us, please leave us a positive review. Last but not least, if you'd like to leave us a text or a voicemail, or if you'd like to get our Discord information too, you could text us besides emailing us, obviously. But if you want to text us or leave us a voicemail, 708 Lantern, and let us know what you think.
Yes. Also, social media wise, check us out over on Blue Sky now as well. I only mention it. Let's forget the Elon Musk, the political side of the argument against Twitter. Just from a basic user case and like ease of use, comfortability, like whether or not it's just filled with bots and ads and stuff, Twitter has become a shell of what it once was in terms of so many bots responding to things. It's really become an unusable platform in terms of any sort, like the headache, the benefits of Twitter in terms of interacting with the audience specifically outweighed the negative aspect of just being on a social media platform. Now it's starting to reverse where the negatives are outweighing the positives, and Blue Sky is kind of giving me the old school Twitter vibe in terms of having a cleaner feed. So I'm not saying we're leaving Twitter, but it's gotten pretty bad over there to where it's not even fun to check in anymore. So find us on Blue Sky just in case. That's all I got to say about that. I'm not talking about the political, you know, Trump, Elon Musk side of it. It's just the pure use case scenario at this point is it's no fun. And why put any effort into a social media that's not even remotely fun?
Twitter was barely fun to begin with. So even with the long time ago. So I don't know. I get what you're saying, but it's.
Yeah. There's more porn and bots and crap there than there used to be. And it's just, it's a mess. It's a mess.
That's life in 2024, Chad. That pretty much sums up everything. And on that note, good night, everybody.
Good night.